This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
This month in the news, a new state of affairs on Mars, gravitational waves revisited, and Indian astronomy takes flight. This was the one many people had been waiting for. On Monday the 28th of September, scientists from NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, or the MRO mission, announced to the world that evidence for liquid water had been found on Mars. The presence of the H2O molecule on the red planet had been established since the 70s, with the Mariner 9 spacecraft providing images of geological features such as dry riverbeds and canyons, which are direct evidence for liquid water having been present on Mars at some point in the past. The Viking missions to Mars provided the first detection of water molecules present in the Martian soil, and these were found by the gas chromatograph mass spectrometer when soil samples were heated. Frost was even visible at the Viking 2 landing site, which was one of the colder areas on Mars. Subsequent missions over the years have consolidated the evidence for water on Mars. Most famously, large polar ice caps located slightly below the surface were first detected by the Mars Odyssey spacecraft, and the presence of water ice was confirmed by Odyssey's lander, Phoenix. Finding liquid water on Mars, though, posed its own set of problems. For one, liquid water as it is on Earth cannot exist on the surface of Mars given the temperature and pressure conditions. The atmospheric pressure is about 6 millibars, which is just below water's triple point. For reference, the atmospheric pressure on the Earth's surface is 1 bar, or 10 to the 5 pascals, which is roughly 150 times more than that. This means that while temperatures on the surface can surpass 0 degrees Celsius, in these conditions water ice just sublimates directly into water vapor without going through the liquid phase. There are some exceptions to this. Low-lying areas on the planet, for example in the impact crater called Hellas Planitia, it's deep enough that the atmospheric pressure actually reaches about 11.5 millibars, which is above the triple point, so liquid water could exist there at a temperature of greater than 0 degrees. But, as most of our listeners will know, dissolving things in water can change its properties. So it is with salt water. The more salt you dissolve in water, the lower the freezing point of the water gets. Seawater, which contains about 3.5% salt by weight, freezes at minus 1.8 degrees Celsius. Fully saturated salt water, when it's about 23% salt by weight, freezes at minus 21 degrees. So, all this is to say that liquid water is definitely still possible on Mars, provided you allow for some impurities in the liquid. And this is where the recent discovery comes in. So, as we've mentioned previously in the Jodcast, and there is not an end about this a bit later in this episode, scientists studying images from the MRO, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, have been interested for several years now in thin, dark streaks visible across the slopes of the red planet. Now, these were dubbed recurring slope lineae, or RSLs, due to the fact that they change in appearance according to the season. They darken and appear to flow down steep slopes during warm seasons, but they fade in cooler seasons. And they appear in several locations on Mars when temperatures are above minus 23 degrees Celsius and disappear at colder times. So, the variation of the RSL has been observed for several years, and most Mars scientists suspected that they were composed of some kind of liquid briny water. And the confirmation came thanks to the imaging spectrometer aboard the MRO, known as CRISM. It detected the signature of hydrated minerals, known as perchlorates, in the RSLs. And perchlorates are simply a type of salt, like sodium chloride, that can be dissolved in water. And when you dissolve perchlorates into water, the freezing temperature lowers by quite a bit. On top of that, the perchlorates were only detected when the RSLs were at their widest, so it lends credence to the idea that the perchlorates themselves are kind of behind the phenomenon of the widening and narrowing lines on the slopes of Mars. But you shouldn't start imagining sort of a river flowing down a slope. Scientists envisage the RSLs as sort of shallow subsurface flows with water wicking to the surface. That explains the darkening that's visible on the images. Of course, the presence of liquid water, however salty, is seen as a tantalizing hint at the presence of life. Extremophile bacteria can survive on Earth in similarly salty conditions and other extreme conditions, but for the moment, the MRO scientists are going to continue observing the liquid flows on different areas of Mars. Only 3% of Mars' surface has actually been covered at the resolution of the MRO, and with NASA's stated ambition to get to Mars by the late 2030s, the red planet will be the subject of ever-increasing scrutiny in the decades to come. In other news, the gravitational wave detection experiment LIGO has been reopened for business after a 5-year, $200 million US dollar upgrade. LIGO stands for Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, and its updated incarnation has been dubbed Advanced LIGO. The instrument's goal is to achieve the first ever detection of gravitational waves, the ripples in the fabric of spacetime that are caused by large gravitational events such as the collision between two black holes. These gravitational waves were predicted by Einstein all the way back in 1915 when he came up with his general relativity equations. To actually detect these, LIGO needs to measure the minute deformations of spacetime over very large distances. The detector actually looks for deviations in the path of two 4-kilometer long perpendicular laser beams, which bounce off a system of mirrors and then interfere with each other. If the beams are perturbed by gravitational waves, the length of the path taken by the lasers will change, and the LIGO detectors can pick up this change. They're so sensitive that they can detect a path length difference as small as 1 part in 10 to the power 22. Now, to give you an idea of how ridiculously sensitive that is, according to Laura Cardonati, who's a LIGO collaborator from the George Institute of Technology, that tiny change is the equivalent of a hair's width change in the distance between the Sun and Alpha Centauri, so it's really incredibly small. So what were the upgrades, you might ask? Well, LIGO ran its twin detectors in Washington State and Louisiana for several years without detecting anything, and a big problem that the scientists encountered was the impact of outside perturbations. The detectors are so sensitive that the vibrations from a falling tree nearby would drown out any real signal and perturb the laser paths. So for one of the detectors, which was actually on a timber plantation, observations could only really be done at night and on the weekends. Advanced LIGO has a vastly improved dampening system, sort of a shielding system, which should be able to protect the laser from any sort of outside vibrations and should be able to keep the laser beam stable for long periods of time, allowing for continued observation over several days. So Advanced LIGO is now 3 times as sensitive as before, but in 3 months' time it will shut down for even more improvements, and when it reopens around 9 months later, it's going to be 10 times as sensitive as the first generation LIGO, and should be able to spot gravitational waves originating up to 120 megaparsecs, that's 326 million light-years, away, on a regular basis. The LIGO scientists expect to see waves coming from mergers of binary neutron stars. These are events that should generate strong predictable signals, but they don't know precisely how many to anticipate. Gravitational wave science is still in its infancy, and scientists aren't really sure which models they can trust just yet. According to MIT physicist Rain Weiss, who's one of the co-founders of the LIGO project, the first detections will be quite dramatic for us. The first thing we need to sort out is whether we truly believe what we're seeing. However, the scientists are certain they will find something, and the door to a whole new realm of astrophysics will finally, hopefully, be prized open. Lastly, India's space program has launched its first space observatory. The satellite, dubbed AstroSat, was launched from an island in the Bay of Bengal and successfully placed in orbit 650 kilometers above the Earth. The observatory has a plethora of instruments on board, spanning multiple wavelengths. It's equipped to take observations in visible light, ultraviolet, and low and high energy X-rays, and is also carrying an X-ray sky monitor to detect transient X-ray emissions and gamma-ray bursts. AstroSat will give Indian astronomers new research opportunities and ease their dependence on observatories abroad. The satellite has a mission life of 5 years, and it's aiming to study starburst regions and high energy processes, amongst other things.